You are listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, Episode 12. Last-minute plans for your trade deadline, a few NCAA free agents to put on your watch list for the next coming weeks, and managing editor of Dauber Hockey joins us to talk NHL trade deadline fantasy hockey strategy. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwanbeck here. Welcome to Episode 12 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. Come back often and feel free to subscribe to our show on iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show or email us at prospectradio@dauberprospects.com. I am with my co-host, Peter Harling, managing editor of dauberprospects.com. Peter, the DPFHL, let's get an update. How did our matchup go? Who won?
Oh, I feel shame. I was not able to come out victorious. I concede victory to you, my friend. I'm still ahead in the standings.
Yes, you are still ahead. You're going to win our division, which will give you a top three spot. You're two or three games ahead of me, so there's no way of catching up. There's only 2 weeks left. But it was quite a battle. We went tied going into Friday night, and then Saturday I pulled ahead by one category, and then I ended up winning 8-6, I believe, is what the final tally was. But yeah, what a battle. I've been looking forward to it pretty much all year. I think we both had it penciled on our calendars.
It's the one week I didn't want to lose, because I didn't want to have to come on the podcast the loser.
Shame.
I go to the box and I feel shame.
Yeah. But
that's actually a Slapshot reference. It's their 40th anniversary this year. Did you know that?
No, I had no idea.
It's because it's an amazing movie.
Well, I've never seen it, so yes, I know. Put me in the shame box now. That's disappointing.
That's right. I lost to a guy that hasn't seen Slapshot. I think that actually makes it worse for me. I just dissed myself.
Oh, sorry.
Let's move on.
All right. You've been all over Ontario, maybe even into Quebec for some games. Let's get some scouting notes from you. You went to an Erie game. How did that go?
They are a treat to watch. Yeah, I watched them. They rolled into town for me for Kingston, and I think I tweeted that when they had the power play, I could faintly hear in the background Sweet Georgia Brown playing. They're just so supremely talented. They walked away with the win, and they made it look pretty easy. I think some players to note from Erie would have to, you'd have to start with Alex DeBrinket. He's just scored his third consecutive 50 goal OHL season and 100 plus points.
And wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, there's still a month to go in the season too. So the kid's legit. Last year going into the draft, you recognize his skill and all that, and I liked him, and I thought he was drafted accordingly in the second round, but I think Chicago got themselves a steal with this kid. I'm not worried about the size. He's just so talented. He can handle the puck. He doesn't look at it, and he's very elusive. He's got hockey strength. He's quick. He's shifty. He's a pleasure to watch. Hawks fans should be really excited for this kid.
Well, and he's proving doubters wrong every single year. 2 years ago, it was, oh, he's on Connor McDavid's wing. Last year, it was, oh, he's too small. It's not going to happen. And he's just keeps coming out and showing everybody that he's legit. And the fact that Chicago gets him just really going to boil some people's blood, just because they seem to find these guys. Alex DeBrincat is going to be an excellent NHL player. Anybody else that caught your eye?
Yeah, there's no shortage of talented players with Erie. They loaded up. But they have another guy that I particularly paid close attention to, and that's Darren Radish, older brother of Tyler Radish, who was recently just drafted by Tampa. So Darren is an overage defenseman, and he is undrafted. He's leading the OHL in scoring. He's a big guy, and he's good on both sides of the puck. He's got good hockey sense. He uses his body really well to protect the puck and take away passing lanes and skating lanes from forechecking players. He's really just slows the game down defensively very well. And on the offensive side of the puck, he's efficient at carrying the puck up the ice. It's not necessarily his greatest strength, but he's also really good at running the power play. He reads the play really well when he's, you know, standing still on the blue line, and makes some really nice passes, kind of like the slap pass, the good hard low shot to the side of the net that's about 2 feet deliberately wide when you've got an open winger standing at the side, and a nice easy, well, they make it look easy, I guess it's not, but the tip deflection goal is so hard for goalies to stop. I spoke to him after the game too, about his free agent status, and I'm not going to glean much information off him in an interview about that kind of stuff, but he's optimistic that he'll be playing pro next year in the AHL somewhere for a team, and he says his agent just keeps telling him to keep playing and doing what he's doing, and it'll sort itself out. So as the season gets closer to an end, that'll be something worth keeping an eye on. Keep him on your watch list, on your fantasy watch list.
Yeah, definitely. If they make the Memorial Cup, he's going to open many more eyes, and there will be a lot more opportunity to show across the whole nation. Like, it's tough to see guys from the West and East go to Erie, but I know scouts are definitely watching the Erie Otters. You also watch London Knights come to town.
Yep, there's another team with lots of good things to watch. So they've got a draft-eligible prospect, that two of them that I really wanted to watch, Fermenton and Robert Thomas. Thomas stood out more between the two of them, particularly his hockey smarts. He reads the plays very well. I thought he made some nice passes, and he anticipated a return pass on a play, kind of a give-and-go, quick relay to a man streaking down the slot for a high danger scoring chance. They didn't convert on it, but he made that play happen. It was really nice. And then at the other end of the ice, he had a really nice stick lift in front of his own net from a player that had the puck, and created a turnover, and it led to a goal the other way. His game's good all around. Doesn't really have like elite level skill, I don't think, but he's still only 18, so there's lots of development time still left for this guy. Size isn't really an issue for him. Skating isn't an issue. And the most difficult thing for players to learn is hockey sense, and Thomas seems to have quite a bit of that, so that was good.
Yeah, and talking about a little bit of smaller guys, Victor Matey is an interesting one. 5'10", 180 pounds. He's fourth round last year to the Montreal Canadiens. How did Matey look?
He looked really good. He was just coming back from injury, I believe, in this game, and it didn't look like he missed a beat. The kid's got speed to burn. There is a play that really stood out to me where he just blew past a defender to get himself a bit of a breakaway, and he ended up drawing a penalty shot on it, and then on the penalty shot, he scored. So today's NHL speed is really critical for defensemen, and if you're undersized, you can make up for it with speed and quickness and positioning. And I think he'll get a really good look at the pro level. He should be turning pro next season, I believe it is. So there's still a bit of wait time on him. I'd say at least 2 years probably before he's really banging down the door for the Habs to make the roster. But if he makes it, he'll be a defenseman that has fantasy upside, because he's got good offensive reads. He reads the play well, and he can run a power play and create transition offense.
And he seems to be just getting better. Last year, 38 points in 68 games. He's already at 37 points in 41 games. So he definitely had some injury time there, but almost a point per game on the back end is pretty good.
Yeah. He's an offensive defenseman for sure. Good fantasy player.
All right, and then you got out to Quebec to watch a QMJHL game, Rimouski and Gatineau. Who stood out in that game?
So in this game, I was looking for some more overage players. Rimouski's got Tyler Boland, and he's I haven't checked lately, but at the time, he was leading the Q in scoring. He's a talented player. He's a little undersized. I guess by NHL standards, I think he's about 6 feet, but he looks like, even though he's an overage player in the queue, He wasn't one of the stronger players on the ice, so that's a bit of a red flag. And if you remember last year, there was a player named Connor Garland who was leading. He led the CHL in scoring, I believe it was. He's in the AHL now with the Roadrunners, and he's kind of struggling to find the offense that he found in the queue. So, I mean, these are undrafted players, so you probably can't add them to your roster now. But if they sign a contract and you can scoop them up as a free agent, you know, you're wasting nothing but a prospect spot on him. And you give him a year or two to see if he can translate his junior success at the pro level. And if he does, then you might have yourselves a really good prospect on your hands. And if he just doesn't transition, if the time and space differential between the leagues is too much for him to close the gap, then, you know, you didn't waste anything on him. So the other overage player I watched belonged to Gatineau, and that's big Zach McEwen. He stands out on the ice because of his size. He's 6 foot something, and he's got a really nice hockey mullet. He doesn't play that physically aggressive of a game, but he moves very well for a big guy. He's got good foot speed, good hands. He's not afraid to try offensively creative plays. And an interesting thing about him is last year, and he's an overage player now, and last year was his first season in major junior hockey. So he's the pure definition of a late bloomer. He's literally come out of nowhere. And he was, I can't remember which team it was, but he was invited to an NHL training camp last summer. And there was a rumor that he had been signed as a free agent by the Leafs, but that's apparently is not true. So Zach McEwen's a player that, if you've never heard of him, and you probably haven't, you might want to look him up on Elite Prospects and maybe put him on your watch list. Another player for Gatineau that's really hard to miss is Columbus Blue Jackets Vitaly Abramov. I think the Jackets got a steal with this guy. I believe he's a third round pick. He's got first round talent. He's tenacious on the puck. He's lightning quick. He's making plays that are head and shoulders above the skill level of anyone else in the game. I think he's him and Tyler Boland are first and second in league scoring. And while I'm not sure that Boland's game will translate at the pro level, I've got every confidence in Abramov, and I think the Jackets got themselves a really good value pick with this prospect. And if you own him in your fantasy pool, you're going to want to hold on to him. And if you don't own him, you might want to look into acquiring him.
Yeah, he's almost at a 2 point per game pace, so that's pretty impressive. Yeah, the queue has some high-scoring guys, but that's pretty impressive for a third-round guy. I definitely think the Blue Jackets got a steal there, and maybe the Russian effect was calling into that. I don't really know. He seemed to... He looks like he has, like, first-round talent, but for some reason he got put into the third round, so I think they stole him there. You watched some AHL hockey.
Yeah, I made it to a school day game last week. Dauber himself was at the game as well, and our Leafs scout, Jason Banks, was there, so the three of us took the game in. Syracuse was in town. So looking at the Marlies, Kapanen and Leipzig weren't playing. They were both out with an injury. Leipzig should be back soon if he's not already. But Kapanen's not even with the team. He hasn't been for a while. And word on the street is he might be dealing with another serious concussion. So that's concerning and a red flag for Kapanen. But I think another thing I noticed about the Marlies game is I'm watching I went with my dad as well. He pointed this out, but they don't really have anyone on the forward ranks that would make you think that they're ready for the NHL. They've got some good players there and all that, but with the injuries that the Leafs have right now, and then the fact that they just acquired Brian Boyle at the trade deadline, just I think goes to show you that they needed help at center, and there was nothing coming from the Marlies. But anyways, the players that I watched that impressed me were Swedish Andreas Jonsson. He came over last year and he got concussed pretty bad pretty early, and that was it for the rest of the season for him. And he came back this year, and he's been playing and got a really slow start, but he seems to be coming around now. He's making pretty good plays. He's moving nice and fast. He's showing confidence with the puck. So that, you know, I'd kind of been concerned about his ability to find his offensive game in the AHL, but I guess he shook the cobwebs off from that concussion, or maybe he's made the adjustment to North America, whatever the case is. He's looking like I thought he would when he came over the first time. And then there's a couple defensemen, Travis Dermott and Andrew Nielsen. They, I think, will be players in the NHL. I'm not sure what their Fantrax ownership is, but if you're looking for a defenseman prospect that might be with the Leafs or in the NHL next season, as soon as next season, these are two prospects I think you would want to look at.
Interesting. What'd you think of Kirby Reichel?
Not a whole lot of good, to be honest. He looked like he was mailing it in at times. And really? I think that's been the knock on him for a while, is his compete and consistency. And in fact, we were sitting in the back row. It was really full arena with the school day game. Standing right behind it, my dad and I were two NHL scouts, and it was pretty hard to focus on the game and not eavesdrop on the conversation, because they were just going on about talking about players. And one of the ones that they talked about was Kirby Reichel, and yeah, they said that he's just mailing it in, and foot speed's a problem for him too. I'm not sure that he's going to be much more than a career AHLer.
Oh, that's really too bad. So I got him in one of my leagues. Should I just go ahead and drop him?
Well, I would try and trade him. He's a high profile player.
Yeah.
And so people who don't go out and watch these games or listen to this podcast might think that he's still got, you know, a lot of upside and a lot of value. And I could be out to lunch on this, but that was just what I saw when I watched the game, and what I was listening to from the scouts behind me kind of confirmed it. And I even talked to Dauber about it, and he's not much of a fan either. Another player that stood out as not being very effective was Brooks Like, and he was actually still technically on waivers when the game started. I believe he was on waivers until noon, and the game started at 11 a.m.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so I guess they were pretty confident that no one was going to claim him. He's just lost it. They played him first power play unit, and he couldn't get anything done. We talked about him and Mahalik and Greening on a previous podcast, and their ownership levels are close to zero, and rightfully so. In fact, Milan Mahalik's not even with the team anymore. He's sipping Mai Tais on Robota Island. He's in forced retirement, I think.
Huh. And on the Syracuse side, Matt Pekka stood out to you.
Yeah, he's a prospect that another podcast that I sometimes listen to, the Bolts Prospect podcast, tipped me off to him a while ago. And I've seen Syracuse a few times now, and he was recalled in the NHL for a cup of coffee earlier this year. And the scouts had glowing things to say about him as well. So he's the opposite of Kirby Reichel. He's a little guy, but he's got a high compete level. He's tenacious after the puck. He goes into the corners and he comes out with the puck. He goes into the dirty areas, and even though he's smaller than the other guys, he still makes the play. He's really good two-way player. He's good defensively. Comes back and back checks hard and anticipates plays and reads plays very well. He's got really good feet. He might not have. Yeah, actually, he does have really good breakaway speed. He's got good speed, so he thinks and processes the game really fast, and his feet can keep up with that. So he's an effective player. And well, I don't think he'll have like first line NHL center potential for Tampa Bay in the near future, but I do believe he could be an excellent third line center and have fantasy value, because he's pretty good on the draw too. He won most of the draws that he took.
Interesting. I'm all ears on this next one. I'm listening very intently. Dominic Mason, what did you think of his game?
All right, I'm really familiar with this player because he played in the OHL for the Peterborough Petes, and they're in my backyard, and I'm there every other Thursday night watching Petes games. So his name is actually Dominic Machine. It's one of those funny Czech pronunciations.
I like it. He's a machine.
That's true. So what I knew about him from watching him for a season and a half in the OHL is he really developed his offense later on in his OHL career, and he had a really nice offensive season in his last year. His calling card or forte game is devastating open ice hits. He just crushes guys, lays them out. If they don't have their head up going over the blue line, he will make them pay. I'm talking like Scott Stevens style explosions.
I like it.
Yeah, so if you're in a league that has hits, he'll rack you up lots of hits. I saw him fight a couple of times. That's not as impressive. Fighting is not his game. He's going to have to do it if he's going to throw out those wrecking ball hits at the pro level. Yeah, he got punched in the nose pretty hard, and he was leaking like a stuck pig. But in the game I watched last week, he looked good. I was impressed. He showed confidence with the puck. He's carrying it up the ice. He's joining the rush. Looked a little lost in his own end a couple of times, so I was a little concerned about that. And he's having a really slow adjustment to the league. If you look him up, he's got 4 points in 50 games for Syracuse so far. But it's just one game, but he passed the eye test in the game that I watched. So if you own him or are thinking about acquiring him in your fantasy league, he could be. There's going to be some cooking time, some wait time on this kid. But if he makes it, he can deliver a variety of multi-cat categories: scoring, hits, blocks, shots. He'll check all those boxes.
Perfect. So I'm going to shop Reichel and I'm going to hold on to Machine. That's what I like to hear.
There you go.
All right. When we come back, we're going to do a list of 10 NCAA free agent players to put on your watch list for the coming weeks. All right, we're back, and we're going to give you a list of top 10 NCAA free agent players. These guys who haven't signed, who are either seniors, juniors, sophomores. So we're going to get you to put them on your watch list. Some of them might be signed in the coming weeks, so you might want to pick them up. Peter, I'm going to start it off. Tyler Kelleher, second overall in NCAA scoring. He plays for the University of New Hampshire, 59 points in 34 games. He is a 5'6", 161 pounds. He's not very big, but he is a right winger. Look out for Kelleher to be picked up by a team. Who do you got?
All right, so Kelleher leads the NCAA in scoring. He's tied, actually, with 59 points in 34 games with Zach Austin-Reese. He's a senior, 22-year-old left wing with Northeastern University. He's not too shabby. He's even got some size, 6'1", 190. So he's a player that I think will certainly have a variety of NHL teams looking to sign him. That's one.
All right, Spencer Fu, he's fourth overall in NCAA scoring for the Union College. He is a right winger. He's a junior, so he's not likely going to get signed, but you never know with the NCAA. Sometimes players come out early. He has 56 points in 34 games, 6 foot, 185 pounds, right wing and center eligible, which might be beneficial in fantasy hockey. So look out for Spencer Fu.
Yeah, he might stay because his younger brother is joining Union next year. So he might want to stay with his brother. Who knows? But contract offers are coming his way. Another player on Union is Mike Vecchione. Hope I'm saying that right. He's a little undersized at 5'10", 194, but he's a 22-year-old center. And he's also right at the top of the league in scoring with 58 points in 34 games. So look for contracts coming his way, too.
Next up, 23-year-old Aya Folo. He is going to be our sixth overall on our top 10. 6 foot, 185 pounds, 34 points in 32 games. That's over a point per game. So look out for Alex Aya Folo, centerman, 23-year-old.
If you like hockey names, here's one for you. Matt Goudreau, you might recognize him. He is, in fact, the younger brother of Johnny Hockey. He's a senior at Boston College. He's 22 years old. He's a little bit undersized, like his brother. He's only 5'9", doesn't have the same offensive ceiling, but he's still got some skills. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Calgary went ahead and signed him and gave him a shot at least to play in the AHL for them.
All right, we're headed to the back end. Defenseman Gavin Bayreuther, left-shooting defenseman, 6'1", 194 pounds, plays for St. Lawrence University, 27 points in 27 games played. He has battled an injury, so he hasn't played the full amount of games. I think he's 10 games behind everybody else, or maybe seven or eight games behind everybody else. But Gavin Bayreuther could have some onlookers for a big 6-foot defenseman.
Yeah, another defenseman who's rated at the point to game pace too, just over it actually, with 28 points in 26 games, is sophomore Daniel Brickley, who plays for Minnesota State University. He's got size too, 6'3", 205. So he might be the best college free agent defenseman available if he signs. He's only a sophomore. He might go back for more school. And moving on from defense, a goalie that you might want to watch, he's a freshman, but he's a 6'4", and he's only 20 years old, but he plays for Penn State, and his name's Peyton Jones. He's tearing up the NCAA. He's got starting goalie potential. Probably going to want to play more than 1 year, so you might have to wait a year to sign him as a free agent. But as far as goalies from the college level go that are free agents so far, he's one that you're going to want to watch.
And last but not least, Nathan Krusko from Harvard University made his name with the Beanpot tournament this past couple weeks. February 14th was when it all ended. Harvard routed Boston University 6-3. Krusko had 2 goals, was named MVP of the tournament. So look out for Nathan Krusko getting a contract sometime soon. And I want to let you know about the road to the championship, to the Frozen Four. Selection show March 19th to find out who plays who. The regional start March 24th to 26th. And the Frozen Four is in Chicago this year, April 6th and 8th. So mark it on your calendars. March 24th is when it starts. And you really want to watch the Frozen Four, April 6th to 8th. Next up in our interview segment, we're going to talk to managing editor of Dauber Hockey, Steve Laidlaw, and get his opinions on some of the prospects already moved before the trade deadline, and find out his fantasy hockey strategy at the deadline.
Welcome back to Dauber Prospects Radio. In our third segment this week, we are talking NHL trade deadline, some prospects that have been on the move, and we're going to do a little bit of fantasy hockey trade deadline. And we are pleased to be joined by the Dauber Hockey managing editor, Steve Laidlaw. Welcome to Dauber Prospects Radio, Steve.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited about what you guys have going on here. It's certainly added something to the hockey conversation, I think, what you guys are doing. So excited to be on.
Well, thanks. It's great to have you. So let's jump right in and let's do a little bit of a trade deadline review. We're recording this on the eve of trade deadline. We are under 24 hours before the deadline comes, so you might be listening to this on your way to or fro from work on trade deadline day. But so far we've had a couple of mostly minor prospects on the move. The most significant prospect going so far, I would say, would have to be Jonathan Dahlin going to the Vancouver Canucks in exchange for Alex Burrows. I did a little write-up on this in my prospect ramblings yesterday, but what was your takeaway from this trade, Steve?
Well, I mean, it's certainly, you know, as soon as it broke, you know, you kind of sat there and thought back to earlier in the week when we got word that, you know, Eugene Melnyk had given the mandate to make the playoffs at all costs, and you just sit there and think about that notion. You're like, okay, well, this is how general managers end up making mistakes. And certainly you look at that deal and then the fact that they went out and extended Burrows, you're like, oh yeah, that's a big mistake. And, you know, I don't know a ton about Dolan, but certainly, you know, one of the things that I do with scouting prospects is I'm huge at searching their numbers, and anyone who's putting up point per game, you know, at any level in Sweden is on my radar, certainly at the professional level. You know, you're on my radar. So, you know, to do that as a 19-year-old, I think that you're looking at a pretty darn good prospect. And even if he doesn't work out, the process that went into that trade just, I mean, it strikes me as a bad deal for the Senators.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I was noticing on Twitter the other day that there was a lot of people throwing out the comparison to the Erat and Forsberg trade in this scenario. And some people were quick to dismiss that. But if you look at Dahlin and Forsberg's comparable stats from the same league at the same age, they're very similar. And Erat and Burrows could equally be diminishing assets as well. So yeah, I think it's pretty could be clear to me that this trade was a win for Vancouver, and good for them and their fans to be getting some youth and some prospects coming up. Another trade saw the Bishop move, sending Bishop to the Kings for Eric Cernak. Any thoughts on that trade?
I mean, it was befuddling, really. You know, I thought that Bishop was the key to getting Tampa Bay to the playoffs. I mean, I guess they got a deal that they liked, and, you know, they decided to make the move on trading Bishop probably last summer, and then they never really could make a deal work. So when they finally got something that actually worked, they're like, well, you know, process over situation. We've got to say, hey, we wanted to move this guy. We believe in Vasilevsky. He's ready to be our number one, whether, you know, his performance this season dictated that or not. So they went ahead and did the deal because they'd already made that decision, and they were just kind of waiting for the opportunity. In terms of prospects, you know, I'm not really that huge on Cernak. You know, unless you're in a deep league that's scoring hits and blocks, I don't think that he's going to be a fantasy relevant guy for you. But certainly, the Lightning have had, I don't know, difficulty in identifying which players should be coming up and making their NHL roster as defensemen. So perhaps getting someone who other teams have liked into their system would be a good thing for them.
Yeah, I thought the return for Bishop was shockingly low. Cernak is a nice prospect. He's okay. I'm not a huge fan of him either, and he certainly has much better NHL value than fantasy value. His fantasy value, as you pointed out, it doesn't move the needle very much. So yeah, that was a perplexing trade for me, for sure. Well, one last one I want to talk to you about. Tomas Yurko going from Detroit to Chicago. Is this potentially a scenario where you've got a prospect who's just like wasting away in a system and really needs a change of scenery? Could this be a really good buy low opportunity for Yurko?
It was certainly a change of scenery type of trade. You know, when you're a team like Chicago, who's always looking to plug holes with cheap salary cap options, then you always take flyers on guys like that. You know, they did it with Panic, and he's starting to turn out as a decent winger with Jonathan Toews. So I think they get him into the system, see what they can do with him. And I'm not sure his contract situation, if he just ends up becoming expansion draft fodder.
I believe he's an RFA.
Okay. So, you know, unlikely to be expansion draft fodder then. But, you know, you get him into the system. Certainly they've had a lot of luck with developing players. So, you know, get him out of Detroit where, you know, he's kind of a logjam of softer skilled guys, and maybe you become an impact player for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, well, hopefully he, you know, finds finds a role for himself and can carve out a niche with the Hawks and, you know, fantasy owners who have been stashing this guy on the prospect bench for a few years now could get a payoff on this. I'm not sure if I'd go so far as to say it's his last chance. If it doesn't work out for him in Chicago, as I pointed out, he's an RFA. He could find himself in Vegas, like you said, or any other team, and that could be his last chance. But speaking of prospects getting opportunities at the trade deadline, you and I and Paul were talking just before we started recording about the potential for some trade deadline deals to impact prospects already on a team. So two teams in particular that I think are aggressively looking to make some moves and have already with Arizona and Colorado. Those are two teams who have some veteran players, established players that they're looking to move out and are looking for youth and picks and prospects in return. What do you think could be the impact on the organizational depth for those teams? Should they be able to make some more moves?
I mean, first and foremost, I would suggest that, any team that's in as dire a situation as Colorado or Arizona is, if they had prospects who could move the needle for them, then, you know, hopefully those guys would already be in the NHL, replacing some of the dead veterans that are toiling on their third and fourth lines and not moving the needle for them. So you would hope that those guys would already be in the league, but, you know, maybe just because of improper team management, they haven't gotten those guys up and they need to clear contracts out in order to create space for them. You know, I think the most interesting guy for me is Christian Fisher in Arizona. I'd love when prospects are able to make a quick transition at the AHL level and produce point per game type numbers, and he's right in around that level now. I'm sure you guys have scouted him a lot more thoroughly than I have, but those are alarm bells for me that this might be a good prospect.
Yeah, another guy that I want to point out is Christian Dvorak. He had a good couple weeks, I would say beginning of February, and I think with Hanzel moving on, I think Dvorak could definitely get some more ice time as well.
Yeah, and so there's some prospects who are with the Roadrunners who are having hit and miss results, guys like Ryan McInnes and Brendan Perlini. Perlini's been up and down in the NHL and the NHL as well. So those might be some examples of two players that the Arizona Coyotes are able to go out and establish a yet another blue chip prospect, or just have a player graduate from the CHL or NCAA, like that they own. That those guys might get bumped down a little bit. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about the trade deadline as it applies to fantasy hockey leagues. I think the first thing you want to do if you're in a league is decide if you want to trade or not. The league that you and I are in, Steve, I think I'm pretty much decided that I'm not going to trade. And the reason why is I've been rebuilding since I joined the league. I took over a rotten team, and I finally got it respectable. And I'm not really prepared to mortgage future assets because I'm a competitive team, but I'm not contending. So I don't want to give away first-round picks and top prospects for one round in the playoffs, which I'm already in. So you have to look at your roster and decide, do I buy, do I sell? So what are some thoughts you might have on identifying your own roster and maybe finding a trade partner?
Well, I think that your league's format certainly matters a ton in determining whether you're going to buy or sell or what your plan is at the trade deadline. Because if you're in a head-to-head league, then you know, you're kind of at the fate of the fantasy gods. You know, last year you could have all the superstars in the league and you could go up against Jussi Jokinen in the wrong week and you're going to lose just because he decided to go bananas for a week. So a lot of it is luck-based. You can certainly influence your luck, but you're not going to be able to change, you know, what your team can do over 7 days. You know, you can identify certain things like which teams are playing the most games during your fantasy playoffs, and you can try to key on players in that league or in in those weeks, and you know, that becomes more difficult to do in keeper league settings, because, well, you might end up trading a player who's going to be really good for several years just to try to game the system and get a few more man games during your head-to-head playoffs. So risky strategy in keeper leagues, but something that you could certainly look at doing. You know, if you're in a points league that, you know, you can trade keepers, but you're not playing head-to-head, you're just trying to accrue the most points, then, you know, it becomes a lot easier to, you know, kind of buy and sell, because you know how many points a player already has. So there's a lot less risk to take. So it's more just about the math. Oh, you know, I got to beat out, you know, these other buyers in order to, you know, win the best players off of the teams that are toiling at the bottom of the standings and aren't going for it this year. So, you know, I'll give up my first, second round pick next year in order to get the best player off of a bad team, knowing that that's going to vault me even further up the standings. Those are kind of some of the factors that I'm looking at. You know, you do a lot of scouting and you try to decide, is this a good draft year? You know, do I care to invest all my picks, or do I want to have picks for come draft time? Am I going to buy players who I could turn around and sell around draft time and get, you know, try to recoup the draft picks that I gave up or the prospects that I gave up in order to, so that really I'm just, you know, turning the assets in for a better chance during my playoffs, and then I don't really lose anything long term. Those are some of the things that I look at.
What about salary cap leagues? A lot of leagues have salary caps and salary cap floors. What are some tricks you can suggest for leveraging salary cap in trade negotiations?
I mean, with the salary cap, I mean, if I, you know, first and foremost, with any setting, I don't want to be a seller. All right, I am trying to be a buyer. But one of the things that you'll find with the trade deadline is that you can kind of, you know, you can be a contending team and you can also sell, because there's other teams trying to make up ground, and so you can use, you know, kind of the bravado or fanfare of the trade deadline situation to kind of force teams into making tough decisions with their roster and try to get better long-term assets out of them. I mean, you know, just for an example, like I've got, you know, Chris Kunitz on my roster in the UHL, and, you know, he's an expiring veteran who contributes a lot of good things. And he would certainly help me in the fantasy playoffs, but I'm considering trading him right now because, well, again, the head-to-head playoffs are luck, you know. So if I can move him for a really good asset and, you know, get, you know, someone's worst player off their roster, but is he really going to be that much worse over the span of 5 weeks? Then I'd set my team ahead. So that's, you know, little tricks like that that you can wager. And I mean, certainly you want to leverage cap space wherever you can. So, you know, if you save yourself a bunch of cap space come trade deadline time, when everyone's going to be looking to offload bad contracts, then you're in a position to get better assets out of them because you're willing to take on more expensive players.
Yeah. Salary cap space is a trade commodity. People trade to acquire it, or they have it and they use it to acquire assets in lopsided trades because they're just taking an advantage of a team that's in salary cap trouble. You can certainly leverage it to your favor. You were saying that you're always trying to be a buyer, not a seller. Do you, last episode we talked, Paul and I, at length about tanking in fantasy hockey. What's your quick philosophy on tanking?
The only way that I'm tanking is if my fantasy team gets into a bus crash or all contracts the mumps or something like that. Like, I am finding a way to be a winning team because there's nothing, I don't know, I don't think there's anything easier in a fantasy league than getting your team from incompetent to competent. And if all you have to do is make your team competent, to get yourself to the fantasy playoffs, then you have a puncher's chance. Like, again, anything can happen, whether your fantasy playoffs are, you know, 3 weeks or 5 weeks. Get yourself to the dance, and if your team is in such dire straits that you can't, then sure, you tank it away, but I don't think that you immediately go into a league thinking, I'm going to be a rebuilder, because it's very easy to get yourself back to competence. Now, I mean, the more demanding the league, the more stringent the settings, the more difficult that is. But even in, you know, the UHL, where we've got, you know, a pretty strict salary cap and 24 teams, and everyone's fighting over you know, minor league players that they can stash and use cheaply off the waiver wire. I mean, even in that, like, it doesn't take that much to become a contender, because if you're thinking about tanking, well, guess what? There's probably six or seven other managers in your league also thinking about doing it. So just trade with them. Just trade with the teams that want to lose, and then you become a winner.
Yeah. Steve, in your experience, are you more of a big splash guy, or just a tinker with your team, kind of add one or two spots? And have you found one way or another a better way of building a team to the playoffs?
I will do any type of trade. I will do big splashes. You typically end up having to pay more for that. So when you are going to make a big splash, you got to make sure you're getting the right guy who fits into your league. But, you know, if you can get a top 10 player in your settings, then you go out and do that, because it's going to be a lot easier to then, after, fill in the spots around the margins with the tinkering small trades. So, I mean, ideally at the trade deadline, you don't want to be making that big splash, because that's when you make your mistakes. You'd rather do little tinkering type moves. Like, I recently just scooped up, you know, in the UHL, we've got hits and blocks, and I scooped up Matt Irwin, who's making the league minimum. And he's going to be on a cheap contract next year. Gave up a second round pick for him. Wouldn't have done it if he didn't have that cheap contract for next year. But he's a guy who's going to help me this year. He's going to help me next year. And that second round pick probably wouldn't have helped me either year. So those are the type of little moves that you can do to upgrade your roster on the cheap. And that's kind of what I would try to do around the trade deadline, rather than making a big splash. Now, I'm no stranger to making a big splash at the trade deadline either. Last year, I think it was an hour to deadline lock, and I traded Connor Hellebuck for Nikita Kucherov. So I'm not above making big splashes. I'm not above making small moves. Whatever's going to make your team better and isn't going to kill your team long-term should be what you're trying to do. I mean, you should try to win every trade. Now, I don't know if that's great etiquette, because if you win your trade, then the other guy probably has to lose it. But that's what you should be trying to do.
All right. That's some good stuff, Steve. Before I let you go, one question or thought. Do you have any predictions or things that you'll be looking for specifically come the deadline tomorrow in the NHL?
A few things I'm looking for. I want to see where Thomas Vanek winds up, and if he can actually show up for the playoffs. I'm curious to see what happens with Yaroslav Halak, because I think that he is the type of goaltender who, wherever he ends up, is going to severely upgrade that team's backup situation, and that could mean, you know, the difference between 5 or 6 points in the standings over these last 20 or so games. And I mean, that could be, you know, home ice advantage in the playoffs. That could mean the difference between being a wild card or not making it at all. So certainly he's someone that teams should be getting in on. Of course, his contract doesn't make that the easiest addition, because $4.5 million next year, no one wants that. But, you know, other than those two guys, are there really going to be any big splashes? It's tough to say, because anyone with term is most likely going to be moving during the summer, not at the deadline.
Yeah, I feel bad for the Sportsnet guys that they're going to be on live TV all day tomorrow talking about the trades that have already happened over and over. Thanks for joining us, Steve. If our listeners don't already know where to find you on Twitter and where you can be found with your writing, let them know.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Steve Laidlaw. Fire me fantasy questions. I don't always get to them in a timely manner, but I certainly try to get them in my Saturday mailbags. You can find my stuff on Sportsnet on Mondays, on Puck Daddy on Wednesdays, and then on Dauber Hockey all throughout the rest of the week. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Peter, Paul. Take care, gentlemen.
Good stuff, Steve. Talk to you soon, man.
See you later. A lot of great ideas and tips for the upcoming trade deadline. Hopefully your deadline hasn't passed yet. We want to thank Steve Laidlaw for joining us this episode. Again, you can find Steve on Twitter at Steve Laidlaw. Feel free to ask him any fantasy questions. As he said, he tries to get to all of them, and he sometimes even gets them into his weekly mailbag article on Dauber Hockey. We also want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in as well and giving us a review. If you haven't done a review, please take a few seconds to rate and review us. You wouldn't believe how much of a few great reviews will do for our listenership. Please make sure to give us a follow on Twitter at @DPR_show. We post other podcasts that may be helpful. Some ideas for better scouting, some other scouts we enjoy following, basically anything to do with scouting and prospects. You can also follow or tweet our personal accounts. Myself at Swanbag and Peter at P Harling. That's it for now. Talk to you soon.
Cheers.